Welcome to Books in the Freezer, a podcast dedicated to the deliciously disturbing world of horror fiction. I am your host, Stephanie, and today I am joined by returning guest and Bram Stoker Award-winning author, Cynthia Pelayo, to talk about her latest novel, Forgotten Sisters, and urban legend horror. So welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephanie. Thank you for having me back.
I was so excited to have you back, and I didn't get a chance to congratulate you on your Stoker because I think I left during the ceremony and didn't come back for the next day. So late congrats on that.
Thank you. We ran into each other like briefly.
Yeah.
As I was like rushing from one panel to the next. And it was funny because it's like, I remember after the ceremony, I was like up in the front by the stage, and I remember, I think it was Becky Stratford was like, good luck getting out of this ballroom. And it took me an hour to like get out of the ballroom because people were stopping and congratulating. It was definitely one of the top five moments of my life.
So. We were all so happy. Like our table was all in tears. At your acceptance speech. So
thank you. It was just a very emotional time for me. I grieved really publicly. I had lost my dad a few weeks before, and I don't even know, like, it was just I remember a lot of people telling me, I don't even know how you're like functioning. I was like, I don't know how I'm functioning either, but I felt like just getting out right after he died was very helpful, because sitting at home wasn't going to be healthy for me. And like, I think like 2 weeks later, I went to AuthorCon, and then I went to Brian Keene's wedding right away. I just needed to kind of get out, even if I was still grieving. And then I just remember when they called my name, I couldn't get up because yeah. It was just the shock of, I did so much to get here and he can't see it. And I just felt so kind of, you know, it's like the weight of all these years of all the hard work. And it's like, you couldn't see it, Dad. We got here, but you can't see it. So
I'm sure he knew it was going to happen, though. You were headed for that. So,
yeah, I was talking to my mom yesterday, and because the local papers are, both of the local papers, the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times, I'll be featured in them. And then I called my mom and I was like in tears. And she's like, he knew this is where you were going. And I was like, but he's not good. Like he would have just like laughed and loved it. I mean, I he did at home hospice. He was very firm. He did not want to be in a hospital. And we were like, we all agreed. My two brothers and my mom were like, okay, well, we're going to do at home hospice. This is, and I think we were all like, this is going to be tough psychologically. And it really is for anybody that decides to go that route with a family member. I feel like it was for me I'm going to be talking about urban legends and spirituality. For me, it was very like spiritual watching him die. And if you've ever watched somebody with cancer die, it is very traumatic because the physical changes are just dramatic. And I just remember being in the room at one point with my husband as my dad was dying, and I was kind of like, it feels like something divine or something spiritual is here with us. And he was like, I really think so. And he, you know, before, when he was still aware, some of the last things he told me were like, you shouldn't be here, you should be writing. Why are you here sitting next to me? You should be writing. And so knowing that the end, he knew that that's what I was working on, and that was his focus for me, gives me some peace that I haven't stopped and I've continued. And every time I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired, I can hear him like, what? You should be writing. You should be doing this. And so I've struggled with my own spirituality for a long time. And I think it made me return to a lot of my original spiritual beliefs because of things that I saw and things that I encountered during those final moments with him. And I think it kind of validated for me that we don't end, that there's a continuation. And I always said, I don't believe in ghosts. Like, I don't want to be like, but I've done all the paranormal stuff because I'm obsessed with like, I went through like a really big paranormal investigative stage, and I've gone to all these really cool places and like the vaults in England and all kinds of places. And I never encountered anything at all of these places and cemeteries that are historic. And I remember after my dad died, at one point, you know, we held vigil with his body and we were all there with him. And there was a point when I was alone with him and I remember looking at him and saying, "Don't come to me as a ghost, Dad, because if you come to me as a ghost, I will lose my mind." I couldn't, like, I think I would just, I just didn't want him to do that. And 2 weeks after he died, I had a dream with him and he was like, and my brother's name is Richard. He's like, "Richard is bothering me." I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Richard is bothering me." And it was what he shouted at me. And I woke up, it was like 3 or 4 in the morning, and I called my mom and I was like, "Dad just came to me in a dream and he said, Richard's bothering him." And she's like, "Oh, I didn't want to tell you. And there's no way you would have known this, but your brother's been going to the cemetery every morning and just sits there until they close." And so she's like, "I will talk to Richard." And I was like, "Yep, that I wow. believe there's something else."
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's been a lot. It's been a lot. It's like, you know, I believe Shoemaker's Magician came out the day after he died. I couldn't really promote that book. And it was a book that I really enjoyed writing because it featured an autistic character and I'm the mom of 2 autistic kids. And so he died, my book comes out, and I just get rushed into like getting the StokerCon book ready, being a guest of honor, winning the Stoker, trying to grieve, trying to write. I think I submitted Forgotten Sisters to my editor. It was due that week that he died. And I was like, "Well, I need time." And I just took an extra week, and the next week I submitted Forgotten Sisters. It's been an emotional, spiritual, I feel like I'm on a spiritual journey, reluctantly, but I feel like I've learned a lot about myself and people and time and love. And I feel like if anything, all of this pain that I have experienced hasn't hardened me. It's made me more aware of other people's pain and maybe even more empathetic. I already feel like I was empathetic. I feel like I'm a natural empath. But it's kind of made me go towards love even more. And I think that's part of being human. Like, we're going to experience these things. We're going to feel these things. And I think in relation to urban legends, it's so much to have has to do with ghosts and the belief that we continue on and we want to believe that mm-hmm. we will continue on and our loved ones will continue on somehow. At least I want to believe that. I'm going to stick to that.
I see that theme in Forgotten Sisters with Anna and her podcast and her wanting to memorialize these people and have their stories be known and told through this podcast of Chicago's ghost stories, Chicago history.
Yeah. There's a lot of very fascinating ghost stories in the city. And the event that I write about in Forgotten Sisters is something that I learned about maybe like 10, 15 years ago. And I was surprised that I didn't know about it. I was surprised that so many people died here on a rainy day. And they've essentially been forgotten by our city history, local history, even American history. Because this is the largest maritime disaster in American history that I wrote about. And I was like, how did so many people die? And we just don't talk about this. And so it's been part of I think it's a recurring theme in my work, writing about the dead and the forgotten.
I could see that, yeah. And also, yeah, with Children of Chicago, this intersection of fairy tales and kind of urban legends and their ties to real world violence and crime and then into the forest and all the way through this idea that, like, we're going to remember these people that suffered violence. Yeah. Need to be remembered.
Yes. And I think fairy tales and urban legends allow us a way to kind of digest these horrible things a little bit easier. Even something as simple as Little Red Riding Hood. It's a story, it's a warning for young women when you venture out of your house that there might be bad men, specifically bad men out there. And that is a story that continues to this day. There's a lot of, you know, young women women, period, doesn't, you know, young, old, whatnot, that they leave their house one day and they don't return. And I think that's essentially what Into the Forest and all the way through was trying to communicate, that so many women are just trying to live their lives and insert individual that interrupts their life path. And it's like, why are we, at least with Into the Forest and all the way through, my argument was, why are we so silent about this? Why are we, I don't want to say okay, because I don't believe that we're okay with so much of this, but why don't we place more attention to these really awful things that happen to our women, like, you know, and female presenting people? Like, I just don't understand. It's just so mind-boggling to me that somebody can leave their house or walk to their car after doing groceries and someone can think that they can take them and do whatever they want with them. And there's a ripple effect that happens when somebody dies. It's not just that one person that dies. You're impacting an entire community. And I think that's what I hope people take away from Forgotten Sisters, that 22, I mean, hundreds of people died, but it was 22 entire families were killed one morning. And so what does that mean to their extended family?
Yeah. I think people do just have a hard time digesting that level of loss.
Yes.
At a scale. And I think, I feel like a lot of urban legends are warning, and I think in a way to give you the illusion of control, like the always check your back seat, always do this, this idea that like these are warning.
Yes, I agree. Even the traveling hitchhiker, which is such a fascinating urban legend, and it's essentially, again, it's a stranger danger type story. And it's something that we've heard about. We've always heard about this tale. You know, even something as simple as check your Halloween candy. We've always heard that story. And why is that? Because someone has the capacity to perhaps do something they shouldn't do. And so it's a nice way to give these warnings without saying blatantly and harshly what could essentially happen. Okay, well, if you pick up a stranger, or if you allow a stranger into your house, what could happen? I mean, they could be completely benign and innocent and just want to use your telephone or whatnot. Or they can come in and rape and kill you. I mean, that's the warning, and that's harsh, and it's what happens. I mean, a lot of people go missing every year. I mean, not just women. I mean, Forgotten Sisters is focused on men.
Yeah.
And young men, college-age men that have been going missing along the Chicago waterways for many years. And this was happening a lot in like the Boston area for some time. And now we're starting to see it in Chicago. And the urban legend is, I didn't say it in the book, but if you Google the smiley face killer, there is this whole theory of a network of killers that have been purposefully targeting young college age men for years. There's even some detectives that have pulled together a lot of research that they believe that they can validate that this is a case. Of course, there's people that are like, this is just an urban legend. There isn't a network of like serial killers. But can you imagine that? A network of serial killers? But that's what Forgotten Sisters, I mean, it deals with a lot of things, but that's one of that is the series of killings that I'm exploring.
Yeah, it was interesting because, yeah, that is a demographic, young single men that feel invincible. They're not raised in a culture that tells them to like walk with their keys between their fingers or look beyond their shoulder, look behind them when they walk. So it is an interesting
which is why I wanted to go there, because this is a demographic that hasn't been raised to think that something bad can happen to them. And even I think a few days ago my husband was walking along the Riverwalk and the sun started setting, and he calls me. He's like, I'm over here by myself and I'm panicking because of your book. And I'm like, not just because of my book, but there's been about, I think so far it's been about almost 20 young college age men. And they're, it's such a similar story. They, many of them are out at night along the party scene in the River North area. And they all individually will say, well, I'm going home for the night. And that's the last time they're ever seen. And I can't believe that they're stumbling drunk into, or even completely sober. I just can't believe that this many people are accidentally being drowned. It's just so strange. Like one or two, maybe it's a coincidence, three even. But now we're getting into like two dozen. This is bizarre.
Wow. Yeah. Did your parents have urban legends they told you growing up? Because, like, I had a Mexican mom and we heard about La Llorona, like, all the time. Like, did you have, like,
oh God,
that and El Cucuy and all that?
All sorts of things. I mean, I want to say, so I'm always like, I don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe in ghosts. But I did grow up in what my parents called a haunted house. And we did have an exorcism in our
What?
Yes. So my grandparent, my grandfather used to live upstairs with my aunt and her two daughters, and they would be gone for the day running errands. And I remember, this is like back in the 80s, when sometimes you would leave your kid alone. And so my father would like step out of the house, go run a quick errand, and I would be home alone. And I would hear like the doors upstairs opening and closing and people running back and forth. I was like 4 or 5. So maybe I had an active imagination, but I remember, and I ignored it for a long time until one day I told my dad, are you sure Papa's not upstairs? Like my grandfather, are you like, you sure he's not upstairs? I heard the doors slamming. And my dad very clearly said, we do not talk about those things. It gives power to talk about those things. So they were very aware that there was something very strange going on as well. And I remember hearing my parents talk about it. And then eventually we had a cousin, Deacon, come over to the house and they did blessings. And then, yes, we eventually had an exorcism in our house. So yeah, there was a lot of people that came over to our house one day. I remember it being very small. A lot of people were in the living room and there was a series of prayers that were done to bless the house and to specifically ask for the activity to cease. It was, I think it must have been like 4 or 5 years old. So my parents were very, very, very superstitious. They used to tell me stories about, my father would tell me, he grew up in the mountains of Puerto Rico, and he would tell me about ghost lights that, back then, if people would go out to like each other's houses at night, there was no lights. I grew up in the rural Puerto Rico in the 1940s, and so you would have lanterns. And so he would say at night you would see lanterns, like the lights throughout the mountains, and sometimes there wouldn't be people there. He had told me a story about one time he left to go to the latrine because they didn't have indoor plumbing. He went outside to the latrine, and they had banana trees on their property, and he said he reached for a banana to grab it, and that the tree pulled back, and he continued going towards it, and then so he stopped, and when he looked down, he was at the edge of the mountain because they lived up on a mountain. So he said that, you know, so many superstitions. And my husband's, I'm Puerto Rican, and my husband's Mexican, and I'll tell you one more because I'm fascinated with this one. My husband, the legend that they were told was always like there was a lot of warnings about water. He's from Jalisco, and so they would go to the beach a lot, beach area. And so his grandfather used to always find, like, would say, if you see a coin along like the beach area or like close to the water, you don't reach for it because that could be like a sirena, like a mermaid trying to lure you. If you go and grab the coin, it will suck you in. And so many interesting things. But yeah, I can talk about like these stories. It was, then we just grew up with that. We grew up with that ghosts and goblins and like the duende you would hear scratching in the walls. And my mom would say, what's the duende? And the duende is like a troll, a goblin that lived in your walls. And if you weren't a proper child, it would come out at night and eat you. Yeah, we were raised with fear.
Yeah, no, like, yeah, my mom used La Llorona like that. Like,
yeah,
she's coming to replace her lost children. And if you're a bad child, she'll come and then she'll drown you. Like, that's hardcore. That's a lot for a kid.
Dramatic. Like, and of course we're horror writers. And so, and then we get into horror when we're like, you know, older kids and our parents are like, why do you like this stuff? Like, really? This is what you raised me with.
I know, the most morbid stories.
Bizarre. And these are like, I'm telling you the PG-13 stories. Like, my mother grew up, in terms of like true crime, I'll try to sanitize it in a little bit for the listeners, but my father had a cousin that was kidnapped. He had two twin boys, and one of them was kidnapped and never returned. And so that was always their fear, that you're gonna get kidnapped, because it happened to one of my cousins. And then a neighbor girl of my mother's was kidnapped, assaulted, and dismembered and placed in her parents' garbage cans.
Oh my God.
This is true. I'm sorry, listeners, but this is something that both of them grew up. So both of them grew up with not only urban legends and superstition, but then true crime as well. Yeah. So to them, the world was always a scary place. And I know the person that committed the crime, with my mother's neighbor, was like a friend. Like, they knew this person. And so that's why my parents were always like, don't trust anybody, because you never know what someone is capable of doing. Yeah. I'm sorry, listeners. But
you know, I can see where you get the interest in this intersection of a true crime, real life violence, urban legends, fairy tales.
Yeah.
Well, before we talk about some books, do you want to tell our listeners about Forgotten Sisters?
Yes. So Forgotten Sisters comes out March 19th from Thomas and Mercer. It's my first traditional book release, so I'm very proud of that. It is, again, a genre, like in my style, it's a genre blending novel that incorporates fairy tales, and this one's an adaptation of Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tale. It blends detective fiction, mystery, history, and maybe some romance a little bit. And it deals with sisters Anna and Jenny, who live in a historic bungalow along the Chicago River. And little by little, they start noticing men that have been drowned in the river outside their home. And two detectives eventually come calling because they find a connection between the house, the haunted house that the sisters live in, and the potential killer.
I really enjoyed it. I know listeners can't see, but there were so many passages that I highlighted.
Thank you. Thank you for reading it. Yeah, it's, I wanted to, I never thought I would explore a haunted house. And it was something that I was thinking about it for quite some time. And I wanted, you know, I was thinking about like things like memory and legacy. And I was thinking about like these traditional, like these older, I mean, not that too old, but like the haunted house stories, like the Changeling or burnt offerings. And I wanted to do something where a house responds to a person, and then a person then starts shifting in a way to this haunting. So there's a lot of, I'm proud of it. I do love the sisters quite a bit, and they are loosely based on two individuals that deal with the event that I wrote about.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, the house is definitely a character.
It's a moody house.
Yeah.
Like a 2-year-old having a tantrum when it's not given attention. So I guess in a way it's like my house growing up. Haunted house.
Okay. Well, are we ready to talk about some books?
Yeah, let's talk about books.
I wanted to mention Daphne by Josh Malerman, which is about this town. And we're following this high school girls basketball team, and our main character, Kit, is suffering with anxiety. But essentially, like, in this town there was this legend of this girl Daphne who died, and she's this like giant 7-foot figure that will kill you, and you're really not supposed to say her name, you're not even supposed to think about her. And I really liked this book. I thought it gave like It Follows vibes, just this danger that's always kind of lurking somewhere in the corner, but also with the ferocity of a slasher. So I enjoyed that. And then this town that's haunted by this tragedy and this vengeful figure, and just thought it was a good urban legend horror. So I would say that is Fridge for me. And that is Daphne by Josh Malerman.
Very cool. Our Share of Night by Mariana Enriquez. And so vampires are definitely making an interesting comeback. And so I wanted to talk, and then I'm just fascinated with the legend of vampires and how they're treated in various countries and cultures. And so if you wanted an interesting story, I will just read the very brief description of it. A young father and son set out on a road trip devastated by the death of the wife and mother they both loved. United in grief, the pair travel to her ancestral home where they must confront the terrifying legacy she has bequeathed. The woman they mourn came from a clan like no other, a centuries-old secret society called the Order that commits unspeakable acts in search of eternal life. So it includes so much that I love, like a place as a character, the ancestral home that I've kind of been like really into with like the cool gothic feel. And if you read Forgotten Sister, I try to give like a gothic feel. So, and then the father and son trying to like really understand like who was this woman that we loved. And I love that family secrets. So I'm all for that.
I love that. That has been on my TBR forever. And I've been so intimidated because it's a brick. it's a giant book.
It takes time. Yeah. So yeah, for it's a, was it 600? It's almost 600 pages. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. One of the prompts for the Books in the Freezer reading challenge is to read a book over 400 pages. So maybe I'll do that one, or your other pick. Your other pick is also one I'm considering.
Yeah.
So the book I wanted to talk about next is Queen of the Cicadas by V. Castro. This is like a dual timeline. So one timeline is 2018, and we're following a woman who is attending a wedding in Texas at this farm, which is the site of an urban legend, La Reina de las Chicharras. And that is the Queen of the Cicadas. And then you are following the 1950s timeline, where you see the brutal murder of this migrant farm worker and everything that that sets up, and how the death is really ignored by her town, and how she essentially becomes this like vengeful spirit. And this is a good read-alike for people that like Candyman. And I think, well, we were talking about urban legends. I feel like that's also another way urban legends manifest themselves in horror, is that like, yes, they are warnings like, this happened to this person, don't do that. Or it's, this person was wronged, they were ignored, people did not help them, and now they are back. They are coming back for vengeance. And I think that's definitely the urban legend form that this takes with Queen of the Cicadas, which I would say is also pretty violent. So I would put it in the fridge freezer. That is Queen of the Cicadas by V. Castro.
And taking and staying in the 1950s, I am going to The Reformatory by Tananarive Due, which is also nominated for the Bram Stoker Award in Superior Achievement in a Novel. I'm going to read the descriptions again. Following a trivial scuffle, Jim Crow, Florida, 1950. Following a trivial scuffle with a white boy, 12-year-old Robert Stevens Jr. is sent to the Gracetown School for Boys, but the segregated reformatory is a chamber of horrors, haunted by the boys that have died there. In order to survive the sadistic school warden and the evils meted out in his funhouse, Robert must enlist the help of the school's ghosts, only they have their own motivations. So this is so good. If you like, I mean, there's history here, a very tragic history. There's a ghost story. Of course, there's like vengeance and survival as well. And I think, you know, there's been so many stories about these old type of reformatory institutions where many of these young men were stayed at, and a lot of horrible things happened to them. And it's a wonderful read. It is very gut-wrenching, but this is definitely my pick. So if you're interested in ghosts and history, and especially, like, you know, the racial history as well, I would definitely recommend this. And I am so rooting for this book. So
yeah, I have heard nothing but good things. Everyone that has read that book has absolutely loved it, and I really enjoy Tananarive Due's work. Like, I don't think I've ever read a bad book, a bad story by her, so that has been on my radar forever.
She's nominated twice this year.
Really?
Yeah, and I believe in
the she had the short story collection. Was it The Wishing Well or The Wishing Pool?
Yes. And what was I going to say? Oh, so yeah, A Length. So this is another 600 book. So both of them will take some time, but I definitely would recommend. So I gave Ghosts and Vampires.
Nice. All right. I am ending it with Scanlines by Todd Kiesling. This is about a videotape that people talk about on the message boards, like an urban legend videotape called the Duncan Tape, which shows a 1987 congressman dying by suicide on live TV. And it's one of those things, yeah, people talk about and no one knows if it really exists. But in the 90s, you are following these teenagers that are, you know, on their computer, on the old internet of the 90s, just trying to find, you know, internet porn. And instead, they find this video, this footage. And it's just about the way that this video haunts this group of friends. And it's like insidious reach to all of the people in this town. And this is a dark book. And I don't say dark just referring to like violence and gore, but just like deep sadness. Like it's a heavy read. So I would say that's something you should know going into it. But it is a beautiful, dark, heavy story. That is Scanlines by Todd Kiesling.
100% gonna agree with that, because this one I just kind of, and it's a short read.
So, yeah.
But it is really, it's so, yeah, it really grips you. It's very sad and it's kind of terrifying too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this, I'm all for Scanlines. I love it.
That is good. I talked about that one too on a episode for found footage, but yeah, just everything about that. And I mean, what it's based on too, it's just a whole dark rabbit hole.
It's so good. I think more people need to read it because it's, I mean, it's very emotional too, to see what happens to the young people in it. And it's based off of an event that happened as well, but it's done so, so well.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have two traditions on this podcast. One is that we ask our guests for a chilling obsession. So what is something you have been enjoying in horror lately?
What have I been enjoying in horror lately? I've been kind of going more towards like quiet horror and like gothic horror. And I am all for romance and horror right now.
Interesting. I feel like I've seen an uptick in that in gothic. And I mean, Agatha and She Wore Black will be happy to know, like, horror-mance.
Yes, yeah. That's where I think that's where it's interesting. I was just talking about this the other day. Like, I kind of made like an argument that I feel like, I'm gonna try to keep this brief, but I feel like we're all still dealing with like our trauma from the COVID pandemic. And there's like two different like trends I see in horror right now. Like, some people are going like really like into splatterpunk and extreme, and it's seeing like a resurgence right now. But then some of us are going way more quiet, and I'm all for going really quiet and thoughtful, and I want more horror-mance.
Here for the horror-mance. Have you read any or watched any good horror-mance lately?
Oh, because I have mom brain. The Dowry of Blood, have you read that?
I've heard of it. I haven't read it.
Beautiful. I'm like obsessed with it. So the Dowry, it's S.T. Gibson, right? That one is, I'm like obsessed with it right now.
I love it. So horror, romance, and gothic. Mm-hmm. The second tradition we have on the podcast is to ask our guests for a final girl song.
Oh my goodness. A final girl song. I've been like all Taylor Swift lately. I don't know. I probably should have known this. I did know this before I got on the podcast, but my brain went blank. And I think anything by Taylor Swift. I'm gonna say that, if it makes sense, because I feel like she's seen like such a like, she's dealt with stuff, and I feel like she kind of went through like a really dark period. And I know there's like a lot of Taylor Swift hate, and I do not accept any Taylor Swift hate, but I feel like she's kind of really owned, like, she's gone through a dark period and she's kind of come out of it. And I think publicly, and that's been really impressive to see. So I'm just going to say my queen, Taylor Swift.
I mean, I second that. I love that. I have seen a lot of resurgence, and like, yeah, like there are sure valid criticisms for her, but I think a lot of the stuff people say is like, whatever. Like, she makes music and writes songs acknowledging the nuance in things, and writes songs where she's the party in the wrong, and, you know, she's apologizing, where she's saying, yeah, this was a tough relationship and we both hurt each other, and sometimes a good man can hurt you, and that doesn't make the hurt any less hurtful.
I think she's wonderful. And I know people are going to I think as I've become more and more public lately, I get it. I think that sometimes no matter what you do, you're not going to please everyone. And I feel like she's probably just accepted that, like, I can't make everybody happy. And I've even seen people be criticized for being too well-liked. So I'm like, you know, there's no way to win with the full public. And I think it's just about living your life, your authentic life. And tying it back to the final girl, she's just like living her life authentically. And if you don't like her, she can't do anything about that, because if someone doesn't like you, there's just, I can't do anything about it. I'm gonna have fun and I'm gonna own me. So
yeah, has that been a tough transition for you, being a more public figure?
Yeah, it's been really hard. I think I've dealt with a lot of very strange things really fast. I had a stalker situation. I had three stalker situations.
What?
3 months. And it was like some people were trying to get access to my address. It's been scary. And so I'm like, I'm just a writer. So I kind of get it. I can't even imagine what somebody at the level of like spotlight that Taylor Swift deals with, but it's been a lot, and it was hard to deal with all of those things, like getting more publicity while also grieving and having kids. It's like, I have kids and I have a day job. It's like, how do I balance this all? So it's been a lot emotionally to try to, and I think I have a really good foundation at home with my husband and my kids and my mom. So that's helped tremendously. And it's hard because I know that I got to where I got to because I was always so public. And so sometimes I just try to pull back from social, and sometimes then I'll go back. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Just be understand. Your... It's a tough line to walk.
Yeah. And you're like, I mean, for you too, I'm sure you deal with a lot of this because, you know, you have a massive platform as well. And so I'm thinking it's a lot, right? Emotionally or like energy wise, you give a lot of energy to it.
Yeah.
Life, just keep doing what you like, and you can't worry about all the other stuff.
Well, thank you so much for coming on here and chatting with me about Forgotten Sisters and urban legends.
Yeah, thank you. This was fun.
This was. Everyone needs to go get their copy. It'll be out March 19th.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
This was. Thank you. Books in the Freezer is a bi-weekly podcast. We have episodes come out every other Tuesday. You can find us on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok at Books in the Freezer, or send us an email at booksinthefreezer@gmail.com. Show notes for this episode and all previous episodes are at booksinthefreezer.com, where you will find a list of the books mentioned, as well as several different ways you can support the podcast if that is something you would like to do. There you will find affiliate links, links to merch in our TeePublic store, and of course, a link to our Patreon at patreon.com/booksinthefreezer. And if you're looking for a way to support the podcast without spending any money, there are a lot of ways to do that. One of those is just to talk about it, share the podcast, post it on social media, tell your friend about it. I mean, most podcasts grow because of word of mouth, because a friend or a coworker says, hey, have you checked this out? So again, thank you to all of you who do that. You can also leave a review on a site like Apple Podcasts or Spotify. All of that is extremely helpful, especially to like indie one-person podcasts like this one. So thank you so much. I am Stephanie. I hope to see you next time. And thank you for listening to Books in the Freezer.